This is Radio Iowa. Radio Iowa, a division of Learfield Communications, and this Radio Iowa station bring you live coverage of Governor Chet Colfer's 2009 Condition of the State message. Now, from the State House in Des Moines, here's Radio Iowa News Director O.K. Henderson.
Good morning and welcome. I'm sitting in the balcony of the Iowa House of Representatives. Governor Colfer is due here soon to address the members of the Iowa General Assembly, the top statewide elected officials who gathered here, the Iowa Court of Appeals justices, the seven members of the Iowa Supreme Court, as well as the general public, the governor's wife, Mary Claire Colfer, as well as Lieutenant Governor Patty Judge, are seated near the front of this House chamber waiting for the governor's appearance. Members of the Rebuild Iowa Commission are here as well. Governor Colfer is set to unveil a $700 million Rebuild Iowa initiative. Colfer wants the state to issue bonds, that's the way the state borrows money, and use that money to finance what he describes as much needed infrastructure projects. In the middle of his speech, you will notice that there was going to be a video played, I guess a 7-minute long movie. I will try to keep you up to date with what I see here in case it doesn't translate well for radio. Last Friday during a telephone interview with Radio Iowa, Colfer hinted at his big and bold idea, this $700 million package to rebuild the state's infrastructure. He argued it as much like the stimulus package that President-elect Obama is developing at the national level. He argues in a news release that was handed to the media just moments ago that he will create jobs by investing in what he calls ready-to-go public infrastructure projects, things like sewers, water treatment plants, roads and bridges, some of which were damaged by the springtime storms which struck the state. Another $43 million bill that the governor is asking legislators to pass would include $20 million worth of property tax replacement dollars. As you may realize, communities which were hit by floodwaters in the springtime and tornadoes as well are unable to collect property taxes from some property owners. So that $20 million would be directed to some of those communities to replace the lost dollars. Some flood victims aren't in their homes and just cannot afford to pay property taxes in addition to the rent that they're paying for another dwelling. You heard the cheers go up. That means you know who is in the House chamber. Governor Chet Colfer is striding down the center aisle. He's pausing to shake hands with a few of the legislators. He did not shake his wife's hand, but he did shake Lieutenant Governor Patty Colfer's hand. He's now chatting with the Chief Justices of the Iowa Supreme Court. Then he's going to go up three steps to what's called the rostrum. That is the center point in the House of Representatives from which he will be delivering his condition of the state message. The Colfer acknowledging the cheers. The galleries of the Iowa House are not completely full this morning, as they have been in the past for some addresses. Perhaps weather has delayed the arrival of some guests who intended to participate in today's event, or perhaps they're listening to this Radio Iowa station.
It is my pleasure to introduce our governor, Chet Colfer, for his condition of the state message to the 09 session of the 83rd General Assembly. Thank you very much. Thank you all. Thank you. I want to begin by welcoming all of you, especially the newly elected members of the General Assembly, to your state capital. Now I want to take this opportunity to recognize some very special guests who are with us as well. First, the mayors of three cities which were affected by the severe weather of 2008, Mayor Kay Halloran of Cedar Rapids, Regina Bailey of Iowa City, and Tim Hurley of Waterloo. Please help me in welcoming them. I would also like to recognize some people here who have been through too much sadness this year. Families of Iowans who sadly lost their lives during the tornadoes, storms, and floods. The family of Ray Maycox, Chris Lang, and Karen Fowler, and the family of Richard and Ethel Mulder, Rod, Galen, Dennis, and David Mulder. You and many other, all the other flood victims remain in our prayers. Let's welcome them as well. A year that we will never forget. May 25th began like any other spring day in the city of Parkersburg. Just as in hundreds of communities statewide, families were gathered together, celebrating high school graduations, enjoying the Memorial Day weekend, and looking forward to the start of summer. By sunset on that same day, the lives of all citizens of Parkersburg were changed forever. At just before 5 p.m., a horrific F5 tornado, the worst in our state's history, ripped through town, city hall, businesses, banks, restaurants, and 220 homes were all gone. This mile-wide tornado traveled nearly 45 miles through three counties, affecting not just Parkersburg, but Applington, New Hartford, Waterloo, and Dunkerton. Before the wind stopped, 67 people were injured, and 8 people tragically lost their lives. The storm also destroyed the physical symbol of the heart and soul of Parkersburg, the Applington-Parkersburg High School, the classrooms, the gymnasium, stadium, and football field, a field which over the years had come to be known as the Sacred Acre, were all leveled. Once the tornado stopped, football coach Ed Thomas, whose own home was destroyed in the tornado, walked to what was left of the field and pledged to play the first game of the season on time and at home. Players, coaches, strangers, and busloads of students from other schools volunteered to help clean up the mess. They got on their knees and, moving shoulder to shoulder, crisscrossed the field one way and then the other, pulling up glass, wood, and other debris that the F5 tornado winds had driven into the turf. Rival high schools conducted fundraising drives that yielded tens of thousands of dollars. 4 former football players from Coach Thomas's teams, now playing in the National Football League, led their own fundraising drive through the NFL charity program. Iowa companies even donated the lights and new turf. As a result of all these efforts and the generosity of Iowans and Americans, the entire football stadium was rebuilt. And on that's right. And on September 5th, I was proud to join Coach Thomas to attend the very first home game of the Applington-Parkersburg football team. Well, guess what? Parkersburg won. You know, these young student athletes from Applington-Parkersburg shared one goal: to rebuild the school they loved and the community they called home. Their team spirit of faith, optimism, and resilience is what makes Iowa such a great place. You know, so as a high school football teacher and coach, I know from experience this kind of teamwork is something that we can emulate and all be very proud of. Now I want to recognize one of the most valuable players on our team, my friend and partner, Lieutenant Governor Patty Judge. Patty has stood by me through successes and through challenges, most recently the storms of 2008. So I want to thank Lieutenant Governor for her tireless work on behalf of Iowans. And to the love of my life and the First Lady of Iowa, thanks for being such an incredible mother to our two wonderful children, John and Claire. And thank you for being a champion for Iowa's at-risk women and children. To my fellow statewide elected officials, Attorney General Tom Miller, your work in consumer protection, fighting predatory lending, and preventing foreclosures is inspiring. Treasurer Fitzgerald, you have helped open the doors to thousands of college students. Secretary Morrow, you presided over one of the most successful elections in the history of our state, and you helped us make history at the same time. Secretary Northey, you are helping Iowa farmers feed and fuel the world. And Auditor Vaught, you and I share the same goals of fiscal responsibility and balancing budgets. I also want to thank my friends in the judicial branch, Chief Justice Ternus, Supreme Court Justices, Chief Judge Sackett, and members of the Courts of Appeals. Thank you very much for your service. I also want to thank department heads and all state employees. Your work is appreciated too. Additionally, I want to thank you, the members of the General Assembly and your leadership team, President Kibbe and Speaker Murphy, leaders Gronstall, McCarthy, McKinley, and Paulson. And thanks to you, to every legislator, for your willingness to work together for the betterment of all Iowans. I want to take a moment to also recognize a former legislator and friend who is bravely battling cancer, Senate Leader and Legislator Mary Lundby of Marion. I want her family and her friends and her to know that she will remain in our thoughts and our prayers. So you know what? This is a great team. Not a team of rivals, but of excellent public officials who I am honored to work with each and every day. In addition, I want to acknowledge another valuable member of the team, Major General Ron Dardis. Over the years, and for four decades in fact, General Dardis has proudly worn the uniform of the United States Armed Forces. Soon he will retire his uniform and pass the torch to Colonel Tim Orr, who will become the next Adjutant General of the Guard. Last summer, under the leadership of General Dardis, more than 4,000 members of the Iowa Guard worked with first responders, and they literally saved lives. Their heroic action was one that we will never, those heroic actions were ones we will never forget. This represented the single largest deployment in our state's history since the Civil War, 4,000 troops. General Dardis has led the Guard during a very difficult time for Iowa military families, too. Let's always remember Iowa's eternal patriots, the 68 Iowans, who since 9/11 wore the uniform but sadly never made it home. They gave their lives for the country that we all love. Now I'd like to ask General Dardis and his wife Carmel to stand and be recognized by all of us here. Finally, I want to thank all members of the Armed Services, both past and present, including State Representative Roy Chambers, who was recently deployed. I simply want to say thank you and that we owe you a debt of gratitude for your bravery, service, and commitment to the people of Iowa. Jody? During the disasters of 2008, these Iowa values of bravery, service, and commitment were never more evident. The tornadoes, floods, and storms, which killed and injured so many at the Little Sioux Scout Camp and in too many communities across our state, didn't discriminate in the pain that they caused. But at the same time, we saw together that first responders and thousands of volunteers also didn't distinguish between old or young, rich or poor. They didn't ask if you were black, white, or brown, urban or rural. They didn't ask if you were a Democrat or a Republican. Instead, they asked, are you okay? What do you need, and how can we help? Let's carry that lesson with us this legislative session. How can we stand together, shoulder to shoulder, as a team to rebuild Iowa? How can we ease the pain for those still suffering? How can we put people back to work, create jobs, invest in our infrastructure, and balance our budget too? Well, I believe it's our duty. Our constituents sent us here to work as a team to provide solutions to these challenges. Our Iowa values of optimism, hard work, resiliency, determination, and caring about your neighbor in need have carried us from our first days as a state. So it gives me a great deal of pride to stand before you and say that even in a time of many challenges, the condition of our state is strong because the people of Iowa are strong. Here's why I believe this, because I know that Iowans are tough. We're never better than when our backs are against the wall. We stand tall and we never give up. In Iowa, we keep our promises. Our word is our bond. We stand up for Iowa values and we work together like a team to get things done. And so I believe our first order of business this legislative session must be to rebuild this state that we all love. I believe real images seen in cities like Cedar Rapids, Palo, Coralville, Waterloo, Cedar Falls, and Oakville tell the story of the damage and devastation better than any words ever could. Now let's all be reminded of what our state has been through.
Who could ever have imagined? In June of 2008, a perfect storm of heavy winter snowfall and relentless waves of springtime downpours deluged the upper Midwest that quickly filled the 100-year floodplain, with Cedar Rapids and Linn County in line to get the brunt of the Cedar River's rising water. But the rains kept coming and the water kept rising. With flood stage at 12 feet and recent experience of the flood of 93, the National Weather Service warned of the possible approach to the all-time record set back in 1929 and 1851 of a 20-foot river stage. But the rains kept coming and the water kept rising. At the flood's crest of over 31 feet, more than 11 feet deeper than any recorded measure, the river was nearly 2 miles wide in downtown Cedar Rapids. Washing over 1,300 city blocks, the current was so strong that buildings were moved, foundations twisted, railway bridges were torn from their banks. The devastation spread beyond the 500-year floodplain, stripping the topsoil from valuable farmland and rendering heroic sandbagging efforts useless. This muddy, rancid, destructive surge was now the flood of the millennium. City Hall, jails, court facilities on famous Maze Island, along with the Central Fire and Police Headquarters, all completely flooded and displaced. 10 Linn County Administrative, Judicial, Human Services, and Public Health Facilities damaged and displaced. 9 cultural icons of museums, theaters, cultural centers, as well as our public library, damaged, displaced, or destroyed, including the historic landmark Paramount Theater. The entire town of Palo underwater. Nearly 6,000 residential properties damaged, with as many as 1,500 homes that must be demolished. 3,300 school kids and daycare children displaced. 1,360 jobs lost in Cedar Rapids alone. The preliminary estimate of residential valuation tax loss for Cedar Rapids alone is $81.7 million. The total damage and loss to the Cedar Rapids and Linn County community is estimated at $5 billion and growing. Months have passed. The rebuilding is underway. The resiliency and commitment of this community to come back even stronger is inspiring. Today, as you drive along the I-380 corridor, it appears that life is somewhat back to normal. You see a beautiful river and traffic in our downtown area. You may even forget that you are crossing the epicenter of one of the worst natural disasters in the nation. What you don't see among the various signs of resurrection is that over 70% of the buildings are still vacant. What you don't see are business owners struggling with a financial burden to reopen and then trying to hang on, hoping the rest of the community can rebuild around them, or giving up entirely, taking with them jobs and livelihoods. At first glance, what looks like neighborhoods are block after block of now empty houses and various stages of disrepair, many abandoned completely. What you don't see are thousands of people who have forced to live, doubled and tripled up with family or friends, not for just a few days or a few weeks, but for months and possibly for years. While the damage and economic loss from this flood is staggering, the ongoing human cost could be catastrophic. Battling overwhelming odds, working unrelentingly for months, trying to restart their lives, these people are living every day with the unknown, going to bed each night with a fear of uncertainty. And our health and human services organizations that normally help in times like this have been significantly impaired themselves. With state and federal assistance and an outpouring of private donations, our road to recovery has just begun. We are Iowans, as we are determined, but we have a huge financial gap that we can't fill alone. And that gap is billions of dollars. Linn County in Cedar Rapids has long been an economic engine for Iowa, one of the largest grain processing cities in the world, and a huge provider of revenue for the state. With six of our largest 10 employers not directly affected by the flood, we continue to be a huge market for economic growth and a great place for young families to live and build careers. We must not only replace what we lost, but we must rebuild the infrastructure and the social and cultural fabric of our community just to maintain what we still have and keep Iowa's economy healthy and growing. The 20,000 people directly affected by this flood represent a town the size of Mason City. The 5,400 homes is the equivalent of Independence and Owyhee and all their businesses. Remove these cities from the map, and it's not only a tragic human loss for Iowa, but the negative economic impact would ripple from river to river. This is an opportunity to do something amazing for Iowa. But there are significant needs that must first be met before real hope and rebuilding is possible. This is an opportunity to do something important for Iowa, but a tremendous financial gap must be filled before we can again be a vibrant, sustainable city supporting a happy and productive population. This is an opportunity to do something lasting for Iowa. We need your continued support and funding to help the people of Cedar Rapids, Linn County, and all of Iowa.
The good news is the rebuilding has begun, but there's much more work to do,
and that's why I need your help this legislative session. We've made some real progress. For example, more than $520 million in federal funds have been committed to support more than 5,400 projects in 513 cities, counties, and school districts throughout the state. This will help us rebuild our public infrastructure, everything from roads to schools, from senior centers to water treatment plants. In addition, more than $260 million in both state and federal funds are helping 24,000 Iowans repair or replace their homes damaged by last summer's storms. Nearly 1,000 small businesses are receiving over $135 million in state and federal money to reopen their doors. And over 2,200 Iowans who lost their jobs because of the storms are getting a helping hand from $6.5 million in disaster unemployment insurance. Another $4 million is being used to provide crisis counseling and mental health services to literally tens of thousands of Iowa families impacted by the storm. And $500,000 in college aid has helped more than 400 students stay in school and pay their tuition. Finally, in the days following the disaster, I asked the private sector to be a part of our Rebuild Iowa team too. And thanks to the leadership of Barry Griswell, Fred Hubble, Bill Knapp, Jim County, Pat Baird, and other businesses leaders across the state, and the Des Moines Register, generous businesses have given nearly $8 million to help us. They have done so through our Embrace Iowa private sector fundraising campaign. So, in total, nearly $1.5 billion in state, federal, and private sector money has been secured to date to assist in our rebuilding efforts. In addition, the Rebuild Iowa Commission, with the help of 15 dedicated private citizens, issued a comprehensive report to you with their key flood finding recommendations. We've also created the Rebuild Iowa office that serves as a clearinghouse for all flood recovery efforts, and it coordinates our day-to-day rebuilding plans. Now it's time to take the next step. Let's start this session by acting quickly in three key areas related to flood recovery. Number one, I respectfully ask you to immediately pass the $43 million Rebuild Iowa bill, which I've submitted to you. I recommend we use money from the Rainy Day Fund to pay for this. Our cash reserves and Rainy Day Fund are at historic levels, $620 million. By comparison, after the floods of '93, we had only $48 million in our reserves. This Rainy Day Fund is essential for the state to provide services during emergencies and economic downturns. Well, during the floods of 2008, it rained. So I believe it's necessary to now use some of the money from this fund to pay for the cost associated with our ongoing disaster recovery efforts. This $43 million will help struggling communities like Oakville and Cedar Rapids literally pay their bills. It will assist nonprofits and cultural organizations. It will provide much-needed financial assistance for individuals and families still facing challenges. It will also provide additional funding to address unmet rental, housing, and small business needs, which are currently not eligible for federal funds. And it keeps the doors open at the newly established Rebuild Iowa office so that the state can continue to play a vital role in coordinating all flood recovery efforts. So I want to formally ask you to pass this Rebuild Iowa bill and send it to my desk without delay as soon as possible. Number two, the Rebuild Iowa Advisory Commission report identifies 12 key areas of concern. So I'm asking you to act upon these recommendations this session. Modern floodplain mapping, levee mitigation, disaster insurance, watershed management, and first responder and emergency management training are all important issues that need to be addressed. In addition to the devastation of the natural disasters, Iowans have been hit by another perfect storm. But this time, it's an economic one. We're dealing with a severe recession, the likes of which we haven't seen since the Great Depression. And it has already displaced Iowa workers and threatened jobs. So now, the third step I'm asking you to take responds to both of these disasters that we're dealing with. In an effort to stimulate economic growth during this recession, create good private sector jobs, and address unmet infrastructure needs, I propose the creation of the Rebuild Iowa Infrastructure Authority. But when I say infrastructure, I'm not just talking about bridges and roads. I mean all infrastructure, rail, trail, public buildings, water and sewer treatment facilities, and the utility grid and telecommunications too. But there's no time to wait. This legislative session, we must address every facet of our 21st century infrastructure to ensure that we continue to grow our economy and create jobs and support jobs of the future. In fact, for every $100 million spent on highway construction alone, more than 4,000 new jobs are created. Infrastructure investment is essential for not only keeping jobs in the state, but for allowing us to create new jobs down the road. So the authority will create and then issue up to $700 million of bonds over the next several years. It will allow us to build upon any additional federal stimulus or flood relief funds that our state might receive in the future too. We can do this. This is the first time in our state's history that we have earned a AAA bond rating, and I intend to use it. So here's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to cut back on day-to-day expenditures of state government. But at the same time, we're going to be investing in bricks and mortar to create jobs and keep our economy going. And we're in a position to pay back the bonds without raising taxes. The Rebuild Iowa investment bonds will be funded through existing gaming revenue and will provide grants and loans for projects statewide. So just as we locked arms and worked together during the flood fight, we must continue our efforts as partners to rebuild Iowa by investing in and modernizing our infrastructure. The second real challenge this session is obvious. We need to balance the budget. As you know, along with the rest of the nation, we are entering a period of economic upheaval. However, unlike the federal government, we can't deficit spend. And we're not going to tax our way out of this like California and New York. While I know our nation's short-term economic future is uncertain, I believe our state's long-term future is very bright. Our future will be bright if we use Iowa common sense in planning our budget. When we do, I believe we will emerge from this recession in a better position to lead. Let's be clear, this economic challenge is historic in proportion. Its roots can be traced to the greedy action of a few on Wall Street, lack of financial oversight, and misguided federal policies from Washington. You know what? All of these things have consequences. The result is an economic recession that is hitting families and main streets and factories and farms across the nation. As we speak, 44 states are either in a deficit or headed toward a deficit for fiscal year 09. Additionally, according to the Center for Budget Policy and Priorities, these states are projected to have budget shortfalls of as high as $140 billion by 2010. Yes, that's $140 billion nationwide in terms of state deficits. In short, this worldwide recession is affecting nearly every state in the nation, no matter if you're big or small, rural or urban, Democrat or Republican. This is the economic reality. And I believe it's our responsibility to limit the impact of this recession on hardworking Iowans. Let's stay true to our Iowa values by effectively managing the budget for the rest of fiscal year 09 and for 2010. Regarding the 2009 budget, which we've already made some real progress on, through the executive branch, we've made some tough decisions. For example, when state revenues fell short of projections last fall, I started with my own office and my own departments, telling them to cut waste, to cut unnecessary travel, and to freeze hiring. These selective cuts, totaling $40 million, were not easy, but they were the right thing to do. Then, on December 22nd, as revenues continued to lag, I invoked my executive authority to make a 1.5% cut across the board to general fund spending. This saved the state an additional $90 million. But this must be a team effort. As governor, I'm limited in what I can do within the executive branch. So here's what I'm asking you to do to ensure that we balance the budget for fiscal year 2009. Number one, deappropriate $37 million for the new state office building. Number two, approve the transfer of $10 million from accounts and funds that I have requested. Number three, I'm asking you for one exception to my across-the-board cut. Correctional officers and troopers are essential to our public safety, and I want to make sure these positions are not cut. I, for one, accept the responsibility to manage our state through turbulent times. I will stand up for you. I'll tell you like it is, and you can hold me accountable for what happens on my watch. So I'll be frank. Most of us here, in fact, all of us, won't like some of the effects of these cuts. But all Iowans must share in the responsibility to keep our fiscal house in order. Simply put, if Iowans are being asked to do more with less, then government should too. Here's what we have the opportunity to do. We can make government more lean and efficient. We can create infrastructure jobs and cut spending. This means some services will be cut. And as I've said, because of the national recession, I believe this is no time to raise taxes on hardworking Iowans. Here's the good news.
Iowa is well positioned to get through this worldwide and national recession. In fact, we're better situated than almost any state in the nation. For example, our $620 million cash reserve and AAA bond rating allow us to do some things that other states might find impossible to do. Our unemployment rate, while it's going up, is still nearly more than 2 percentage points below the national average. And companies like Aviva, Microsoft, and Google have come to Iowa investing billions while creating hundreds of new good-paying jobs. In addition, we've attracted new companies to our state, like Axiona and Clipper and TPI and Siemens and Trinity, which have created thousands of new wind energy jobs in every corner of our state. Now, regarding the 2010 budget, which I'm required to submit to you by the end of the month, President-elect Obama and Congress have already started working on an economic stimulus package designed to assist the states. This will impact in a favorable way our 2010 budget, and it could help us address some of our education and health care needs specifically. But for the time being, we don't know what the final package will look like, and we will be constrained by a very tight budget year. However, I'm asking you to do all you can to protect the important investments that we have made together. For example, in the Iowa Power Fund, which has helped create green-collar jobs across this state. And let's keep Iowa the national leader in education, pre-K to postgraduate. Let's keep working to make healthcare more accessible and more affordable. And let's build upon the progress of making Iowa the renewable energy capital of the United States and the Silicon Valley of the Midwest. But as we do, let's all agree that everything is on the table with respect to balancing the budget and finding cost savings in state government. Let's take this opportunity to improve the way that government delivers services. Let's not be afraid of changing the way that we do business. I believe we should explore the sale or lease of some state assets. Let's consolidate state contracts and group purchasing agreements and use other sensible ways to save taxpayer money. In closing, we have a strong, talented citizenry who demand that their political leaders pull together to get the job done. So let's waste no time in getting to work. Neither the natural disaster nor the economic recession are the fault of Iowans, but the difficulties each create are something we all must face together, and our constituents are counting on us. 2009 will be a year of challenges, some as great as our country and our state have ever faced. And today I've asked you, the members of the legislature, to make some really tough decisions. These are difficult days, but in Iowa, we don't want run away from challenges. We tackle them head on. Our state was built by the hard work and sweat of people who weren't afraid to take on this land with all of the challenges. They believe, as I do, that in every challenge, there's a unique opportunity. So despite some setbacks, I am both optimistic and confident about what the future of our state holds. Let's put partisan politics aside and work together as a team for the good of all Iowans. And when we do, I believe our best and brightest days will be ahead of us. Thank you, and God bless you, and God bless the great state of Iowa.
Iowa's O.K. Henderson.
You've been listening to Radio Iowa, a division of Learfield Communications.